people out of about 20,000 a day are keeping this network on the air.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
That's what it boils down to.
That's what it boils down to. And, you know, if the burden is shared, it is lighter on everyone.
That is ever so true.
Yes, it is.
Wayne, I hate to say it, but we have crossed over the top of the hour.
I kind of knew that was going to happen.
All right.
Okay, brother.
Talk to you later, brother.
All right, man, I'll talk to you.
Happy anniversary.
Hey, yeah, happy anniversary, man. I'm sorry, birthday. You said birthday.
Yeah, it's our birthday. This is, you know, we and we're 2 years old, and we're like Gunny Bob said earlier.
I think anniversary is a...
I like birthday
okay,
simply...
Well, okay, it's our anniversary for Head On Radio Network.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been doing this longer, but the network itself
okay,
came...
Okay, here's my line. I'm coming up with our real birthday is the day you went on WNR.
Yeah, that's February 2nd.
I mean, I know that's a terrible birthday. Yeah, but that's 4 years, right? Or three.
Well, in February, it'll be 4 years.
That you first got on there?
Yeah.
Okay. See, I made you run over anyway, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
Okay, pal.
All right, later.
All right, brother. Bye.
Bye. All right, so we're out of time. I'm going to go straight to the news. Our good friend Peter Godbold is a rerun tonight. But stick around after that for the Cup of Joe Late Night Cup with our good friend Joe Vecchio, coming your way at 11 o'clock Eastern Time. Thanks, everybody. And on this night of all nights, Gina, it's all for you. It really, really is. Later, y'all.
Have already been sentenced to life in prison. One has appealed his death sentence. Dallas prosecutors say they'll retry the Islamic charity accused of illegally funneling...
Gather around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 54 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is Thursday, October 11th, so if you're listening approximately 9 p.m. Eastern Time on a Thursday night in October, numbered the 11th, you are welcome to phone in and talk to myself and to two remarkable guests that I will be introducing shortly. The telephone number is toll-free, 877, the number 4, head-on. That's 877, the number 4, head-on, or 877-443-2366. If you have an unlimited long-distance calling plan, you can use that and save the studio a nickel or a buck. That rings in West Virginia, and that toll line is 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333. I try to check mail during the breaks. Mail arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and you can find all of the links there to the guests and to the audio archives from past shows, as well as to the chat room. The chat room is active as I speak. It is be a good night to join us there. You'll find a link to chat on the strictlyconfidentialradio.com page. It's all easy to use and easy to find. You'll also find links there to the Head On Radio Network main site. You can find out about all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network. And there are links there for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links to all of the music that you hear on the show. Excuse me, I was distracted for a moment to help you locate, because we have so much good music on the show. What can I say about tonight? We're going to have some fun tonight. We've tackled some some pretty heavy subjects over the last couple of weeks. Tonight is a music night, and when we do those, we try to take a break from how serious things can get from time to time and enjoy ourselves. We have two guests, and I couldn't be happier to have them both. One guest is Ernest Cole. Ernest, you may remember, was with us a couple of weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago. He's in the calendar, and there's a link there to the previous show. I'll tell you, Ernest and I spent so much time, we were on the line for the entire 2 hours of the show, which is great. We got into so many different things. We didn't nearly tackle all of the music that we wanted to get to that night. So tonight we're going to try to keep a little bit of stricter schedule because we do tend to run on. This is conversation radio, so we do tend to run on. By the bottom of the hour, we're going to run a track and another before the top of the hour, and we have a total of six. So we're just going to do that tonight regardless. If you didn't hear Ernest before, you might not know he's had 17 consecutive top 10 smash hits, six of which were number one on the Dance Music Authority in Billboard, Street Sounds, Dance Music Report, top 50 charts, dance radio charts. So it's he's received DMA's, which is Dance Music Authority's Best Male Vocalist Award for 1990, 91, 92, 93, 94, 95, 96, and nominations for Song of the Year, Best Producer, Arranger, Best Live Performer, Best Male Vocalist, an amazing feat. He's also studied with the American Ballet Theater and is an excellent choreographer and is well known for that. His acting credits include Cabaret, Carousel, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, and my personal favorite, he played Frankenfurter in the Rocky Horror Picture Show. How could you not love a guy who did that? He's also appeared in movies, one's Night People, The World According to Garp. He's critically acclaimed. We're going to be talking about his new album, a CD album this evening, among other things, is called The Importance of Being. And you don't really fully get it until you see it written down. It's The Importance of Being Ernest. Get it? The Importance of Being Ernest Cole. And it's very clever. Well done. One of the tracks that we're going to run from that, by the way, is a duet with Phoebe Snow. I purposely have not listened to that prior to this evening because I wanted to hear it with everyone else. I love Phoebe Snow and am looking forward to hearing that duet. He's on record labels all over the world and very well-respected fellow and a lot of fun. Joining him is a legend. I feel like a kid on Christmas morning. Tom Moulton is joining us this evening. Tom Moulton, Ernest, I'm sorry. Ernest, when we first talked about this, Ernest was saying, well, what if we could set it up so that next time I'm on, I'll come on with Tom Moulton, and I'll talk to Tom Moulton about it and see if he's interested. And I said back to him, I said, well, you know, if I died and the gates opened up and there were the clouds and the first person I saw was Tom Moulton, I would know I was in DJ heaven. Tom Moulton is legend. He actually originated the remix. He invented the 12-inch vinyl single. Without him, contemporary music would not be. He's not a household name, but if you were a DJ, you know the name Tom Moulton. He paid attention to people. He paid close attention to the club audiences and how they reacted to the music and took it from there. He had to figure out, he knew what was wrong. What I'm saying is, rather than listening to all the producers and maybe their recording artists, no offense, Ernest, but he paid attention to us, the people who were in the clubs, and realized what he needed to do. There needed to be a fix, and because of that, he invented those formats. He will tell you that they were just accidents, but I think when you put together the observation of the dancers at the clubs and the invention of the 12-inch vinyl single to put this all together, it's really genius, quite frankly. Tom was also around back in the late 50s when the payola scandals were breaking so heavily in the radio market. He actually aspired to be a DJ back in the 50s, but he realized he wasn't corrupt enough to do that sort of work. Our guest, VJC, from the other evening, we were talking about the radio stations and the types of music they play and, money changing hands, that sort of thing.
So, you know, both of these guys, I couldn't be happier to have them on. So with no further delay, I'd like to welcome you both to the show. Welcome, Ernest, and welcome, Tom.
Thank you.
Good evening. Now, is this Tom or is this Ernest?
This is Tom.
And this is
Tom.
Is Ernest. Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Hey.
I'm doing fine. I couldn't be happier to have you guys here. It's a great honor. Ernest, we talked about so many things when you were on the show before. It was a wonderful interview. People are still talking about it, but we managed to overlook some of your music.
I know. I had such a good time with you, Peter, last time. It was so, and I want to thank you again. It was one of those just really fun interviews, and we just kept talking.
Yeah, we did. We wandered all over the map with that. It was a lot of people. I've heard back from a lot of people who were truly impressed with the level of honesty and the things that you talked about and being in the record business and being in the recording. And Tom, you know, I worship at your shrine. what a guy. You pulled all this off. I'm curious to find out from you. What it was like back then. Apparently the DJs were playing 45s. That's pausing. Tell us about how you did some of the things you did. This will be great interest, I'm sure, to some of the listeners.
Well, how I got the idea to do it. I mean, first of all, I went out to Fire Island, and the reason I went out there, I got out of the music business for a while and became a fashion model. And the guy at the agency that I was at happened to own a place called the Botel. And he said, well, you know, and we started talking about music. He said, oh, you ought to come out sometime. And I did, and I was just totally shocked to see all these white people dancing to black music. And, you know, they were playing 45s then, and I guess the DJ wasn't that good because people would be on the floor for 3 minutes and then leave. And that's where I got the idea. If I could only extend it and make them, you know, where they would get off on the music. And that's where I basically got the idea to do it.
So you're saying that the three-minute limit was the limit of the destined-to-die RCA 45 format, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, most of those records at that time were, you know, 3 minutes. I mean, maybe 3.5 minutes, and that was it. So being in the music business, as I used to be, I started asking companies if they had an instrumental or something, so I, you know, edited it to make things longer, and they said, well, why don't you try it in the studio? And that's exactly how it all started.
I see. One of your quotes that I have, I've been studying some of the, in fact, do you know that when you Google your name, it pulls up hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of you? You're probably the most well-documented man on the planet. One of the statements that you've made is that if you don't like a song, there's not enough money in the world to get you to remix it.
Well, no, because then it's work. And I don't want to work. I want to do things that are fun. I mean, can you think of anything more exciting and thrilling than to work on music that you love? I mean, my God, that's like having your cake and eat it too. And why not?
I agree. It's so true. But Tom, by the same token, in the early days when you first began doing this, it took you 80 hours to do a 45-minute tape.
That's because I wanted to see if there was a way to, you know, start people on one level and slowly, and I started very speeding, you know, a record very slowly so I could play a faster one. And I wanted to see if I could keep them for 45 minutes, and by the time I got them up to the 45 minutes, you'd peel them off the walls, and that's exactly what I achieved, which is what I wanted to do.
Well, and I understand the first club, it was a gay club, the first club that you took
it to? Yeah, well, the Botel, I guess it was a gay club. It was called Tea Dance. And
it was definitely gay. It had to be.
Well, yeah, but there were a lot of straight people there, too. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't just a gay place. It was a place for everybody, actually.
Sure.
I mean, everybody after the beach went there.
Sure.
And, you know, it was like that was a thing to do.
And so they turned their noses up at the tape you took it there, and they said no thanks?
He said, John was like that, you know. He goes, well, don't give up your day job. I'll never forget that as long as I live. Don't give up your day job.
People can be awfully brutal.
Well, and that's what happened. I was very depressed, and I thought, well, you know, I spent all this time and nothing. So I said, hey, look. So it didn't work. And so I was waiting, so I walked down to the end of the boardwalk to wait for, I went there to pick up the tape. And I was so depressed, and the guy who was one of the owners of the Sandpiper, he said, "Are you okay?" I go, "What do you mean?" He says, "I mean, you look like, you know, you lost your best friend. What happened?" I go, and I explained the story. And he said, "Well, you know, John's not a very nice person." And he says, "Look, I don't do the music here, but if you want, I can let Ron hear it. And he's my partner, and he's the one that handles the music. And, I mean, put your name and address on there and phone number, and, you know, that's all I can do is I can let him hear it and see what he says." I said, "Okay, well, I appreciate it, you know." And that's how it started.
And I understand that a couple of weeks later he called you offering you $500.
Well, he called me and on a Friday, late Friday, and said they don't like it. Then the following morning, Sunday morning, at 2 o'clock in the morning, he calls me, and all I heard was, that's all I heard was cackling and all this loud yelling, and I hung up. I thought, you know, well, I got a cross line or something. And then he called me back again. He goes, "They love it. They love it." And I go, "What the hell is he talking about?" And I said, "How can they love something?" I couldn't hear anything because there was so much yelling. And then finally, I hear, "I'll call you tomorrow." And then I hung up. And then he called me the next day. He said, "Oh, they loved it." And I go, "I only gave you one tape." And he said, "Well, Friday night, everybody's tired when they come out, and they want to hear things they know. But Saturday night, they're ready to party, and they want new." And that's what I basically did.
Certainly gave them new. Tom, we could actually do a full 2-hour show just on your history. And in fact, one day when you get around to it, I'd love to have you back just to do just that. Tell us how you met Ernest. Now, Ernest is quite an accomplished individual.
Met Ernest. Yes, good old Flat
yes,
Top.
Yes, please tell us.
Well, I was at Vinyl Mania North, which used to be a store that was part of Vinyl Mania.
Up here on the Upper West Side.
Right. And I was by the cashier, and I was staring at Ernest. Actually, I was staring at his hair.
Doesn't look like that now.
Oh, was it a bad hair day?
That come from Jerome at Pierre Michel, and I look fabulous.
His hair was about 2 inches high, and it was so flat. I mean, you could put a tablecloth and a place setting on it. I mean, I said, "You have to be an entertainer with a hair like that."
Fabulous.
And
oh God.
No, and then of course, and then Brian right away saying, "Oh, are you in the business?" That was Brian Harper. It was so funny. And I said, "Yeah, well, I'm Tom Moulton." They go, "Oh my God, you're Tom Moulton, blah blah blah. Would you like to do one of my records?" And I go, "Well, I'd be interested in hearing it."
Sure.
And that's how it began. But I mean,
what was I thinking in those days, Tom, with that hair?
No, but I mean, well, I would have never met you otherwise. I, you know, because I kept staring at him, and Brian kept looking at me, wondering why I was staring at him like that. And I'm saying, I've never seen hair like that in my life, you know.
Brian,
I mean, there was one hair on a place. It was like the top. It was like like the top of it was cut off, so perfect. I mean, it was so.
It took to do that, though. It took an hour and 45 minutes from the time you got out of the shower.
Well, now, Ernest, did you do your hair that way just to go to the record store?
I didn't. I was a hair hopper. I've always been a hair hopper. I do not go out of the house unless my hair is perfect.
Ah, okay. Well, divine providence.
I would wear a cap if it was like horrific. If I had to do something without my hair being perfect,
no. But then I
get up 2 hours before I have to be anywhere, just so I do getting ready.
Yeah, but the next time I saw you, I said, "What happened to your hairdo?" You said, "Oh, that's passé. That's, you know, that was yesterday."
Well, you got to keep changing.
No, I know. Well, yeah, the longer I know you, I know you. Do go with the change, believe me.
And so was this in the days of email? Did Ernest email you a copy of a track for you to listen to?
Well, no, actually, this story kind of like, can I continue on, Tom?
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, I'm
sure
Brian brought it up to me.
Well, okay. Okay. The Brian he's referring to is, of course, Brian Scott Harper, my late manager and husband who passed away of a massive heart attack. And we were together 14 years, a magnificent man who we're dedicating the new album we're currently working on, Eternally, which the two new hits, To Save the Love, 207, and Live Like You Were Dying, are from right now. Anyways, Brian and I got home one night, and there was a message on the phone machine. And so we just clicked on the phone machine, and all of a sudden there was this message, "Hi, this is Tom Moulton. I've just done a remix on your new record, Don't Let Me Down Again, that Vince DiGiorgio sent me." Well, I fell on the floor. I literally was like,
"This was Giorgio Moroder."
Vince DiGiorgio.
Oh, I see. I was confused.
And it was a song called Don't Let Me Down Again, which was one of my hits that was amazing. Tom did an awesome, awesome job on it. And we started working together from there, and it just took off. And it's been a great working relationship ever since.
Mm-hmm.
Just like with all my other producers. If it clicks, it turns out to be fantastic.
So are you both in New York?
Yes.
Oh, that makes
sense.
Well,
we live very close to each other, too, so...
Yeah, he lives up on the, like, 20 blocks up, not even 20, like, yeah, he's up a little bit more up than I am. I'm in the Lincoln Center area.
Well, that's an epic, DJ slash performer slash Tom Moulton story. We ran into, it's like Schwab's drugstore. You run into each other at the local record store. This is classic.
Well, that's what we used to do. We all used to meet at the record stores and listen for the new releases. And weekly, the new releases would come out, and we'd want to hear what was new and upcoming, because we are always keeping our ear to the ground for what's next. So Vinyl Mania was always getting the newest imports in. So that's where all these great DJs were hanging out there. And Casey Jones, who used to be the editor of Dance Music Authority, and he was once the editor of Billboard, which Tom was once the editor of Billboard, was the cashier. So he was like the DJ, in-house DJ. So it was a very great grouping. It was like almost like a networking of people. And you don't have that today. It was something that was really great in a period of time. You remember that, Tom?
Absolutely.
Well, Tom, how could you resist the temptation to wander around the store pointing at the 12-inch singles going, "I invented that"?
Well, actually, I was there. No, I never thought of it that way. Actually, I was there because of CDs. Because I used to have, because I always liked dance music, and I always liked, and I liked Euro disco a lot, too. And that's the other reason that I went there, because they carried all that stuff, and a lot of stores didn't.
And what was the name again of the track that you first remixed for Ernest? I'm sorry, I lost that in the
flow. Don't Let Me Down Again.
Right.
And this was this an original or a song written by you, Ernest?
No, this was originally written by Vince DiGiorgio and John. Oh gosh.
His keyboard player, right?
Yes, his keyboard player. In fact, I was listening into one of your other shows with VJC, and you played a section of one of their other tracks, Saving Myself by Area Fashion.
Yes. VJC was a wonderful guest, and I have that uploaded as a bumper, may have played as a bumper. I love that song, by the way.
A great, great record, and she was such a great lady. She passed away.
I didn't know.
Yes, she, in fact, it was very strange the way I found out. I was actually coming back from recording with Vince in Canada, and I was at the gate, and I saw the name Fashion on the lady's name on her name tag, and I said, "Oh, that's so strange, because I know a singer named Aria Fashion." And she said, "She's my sister, you don't know."
Said, you have the knack of running into people.
I said, "What do you mean I don't know?" I said, "She just passed away." And I said, "What do you mean she just passed away?" She said, "She passed away on Friday night," and this being Sunday morning. And she was, and I said, "You're at work?" And she's like, "Yeah, I mean, I have to keep myself going." And I said, "I just left Vince in the studio." She said, "Vince DiGiorgio." She said, "Oh gosh, I've got to call him. He doesn't even know." And so it was like really weird, the whole circumstances. You know what I mean? Like, there's just always strange circumstances with me. I don't know what it was. I was placed on this earth, and I just keep meeting people. I thank God for it. It's really cool.
I have to ask a question. What is "I had it loaded up as a bumper" mean?
Oh, dear Lord.
That sounds like tech talk, which the average listener doesn't know what it means, including myself. So
I'm so used to just talking. A bumper is a piece of music that goes between when I stop talking and a public service announcement or the news. It bumps up against stuff.
But I've never heard it called a bumper. I mean, just saying, okay, I'm sure a lot of other people would like to know what bumper means, too. So.
And they're normally short takes and
okay,
right. And so anyway, that's and I learned the word after joining this network. I had to learn a whole bunch of new words, bumper being one of them. Tell us about the song "Sooner or Later," Tom. What did you do with that song? I want to play that here. It's coming up at the bottom of the hour, so in a couple of minutes we're going to run that. Tell us what you did. What magic did you work about on "Sooner or Later"?
Oh, my God.
Well, can I give a little history of it first?
Yes,
sure.
Okay. Originally, it was produced by Steve Skinner and myself, and I was on Unidis Records at the time, and we decided that we didn't want to continue with Unidis. We wanted to go with another label. And we had "Sooner or Later," and we were trying it out, because we used to try out records in the clubs here. People don't do that anymore because there's so much stealing of records, but in the old days, you would take a record and you would do like a vinyl pressing, and you would take it around and listen to it in the clubs and get the reaction to the mix. Well, it was fantastic. The original version, which was in 1987 or 86 or whatever the year was, and it was a huge hit. And then Brian got the idea, not I, to remix it. Brian comes up with all these amazing ideas. Thank God, rest his soul. He was brilliant. And he said, Tom and Steve have got to remix it, and you've got to be in there doing it, and Tom has got to just put his magic to it. And that's just what happened. Tom took it, and Tom heard some things in the vocals and rearranged the instruments completely from scratch one with Steve, and made it a whole mega mix where there was like taking the backing vocals and actually making motifs of the choruses with them and having me answer back, and it was just brilliant. You'll hear it. It's just brilliant.
It sounds wonderful. And just briefly, Tom, I'm told that one of your techniques is to actually take things out.
Oh, I took a lot of things out, believe me. But then I would also, Ernest, come on, I didn't mean that.
No.
No, I would, it's funny, you know, Ernest would always
say, "What, the cowbell?"
Yeah, well, Ernest would always say, he would say, "Tom, you know, I'd like you to mix this song," and I go, "Ernest, I have to hear it first." And he always, and so, you know, I'd hear, "Hello, Tom, this is Brian Harper, and I left with a doorman a CD, and would you kindly let us know your opinion, and if you want to do it, you know?" And then I'd get home, and the phone would ring. I'd say, "Look, I just got in," and then I'd hear, "Ackham, what are you fixing it, Ackham?" And then he'd go, "Oh, what do you think of it, Tom?" I go, "Well, I already heard Ernest ask you to ask me that," and then he'd start laughing. But, I mean, I used to hear Ernest whispering to Brian, ask him if he's going to do it. Ask him if he heard it. What does he think? And it's so funny because I could hear Ernest saying all this all the time. I said, I play it. Let me listen to it. And I go, oh, I love it. Oh, I knew you would.
Oh, gosh, you're bringing back some memories for me.
No, but it was very, because Brian was always so professional. And, I mean, I've never known anybody like that who was so totally, like, he represented Ernest, and believe me, he represented Ernest. I mean, my God, he was right there all the time.
I've never had such, you know what? My
care.
You know, so much care. And you know Matt, who is one of my co-writers and backup vocalists, he said to me the other evening, he's like, "God, that man must really have loved you. Think about that whenever you're depressed, because the work, the effort, The time, the one thing you can't get back is time."
Yeah, exactly. That's the most valuable thing you have anyway, so.
Yeah, and he was there till the moment he died.
Yeah.
And it, oh my God, I can't, I'm sorry, I'm speechless.
Well, he was a remarkable man. We all came to admire him vicariously. When you're on before, I do have to ask this: was there really a cowbell?
Oh, in the original version? My goodness, yeah. Yes.
Well, didn't I take it out?
Yes. You don't remember the original? Oh my, Betsy, come home.
Well, I know I made it a more of a dance record. Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to run that track now. It's a Tom Moulton megamix sooner or later, and we are listening closely for a cowbell.
And oh, no, it's not in this version.
Okay. Okay, thank you. But Bob, if you'd roll a sooner or later for us, please.
We'll be right back.
absolutely fabulous. Absolutely fabulous. And I'll tell you, the chat room and myself included, the organ was just incredible. Tom, did you add that? Ernest, what was that? Especially during the build up, it was magical. It was an incredible, incredible mix.
Did I not tell you?
Yeah, I haven't heard that in a long time. I forgot how good that sounds.
You did an excellent job on that, Tom.
Oh, thank you.
Honestly, it is fabulous. And Tom, not only did you make it so that, you know, the build is slowly gets you into the song, which is just, you know, the thing to do on a dance floor before people realize that you're swept into something else. The build is wonderful. Not only that, I love the way you kick the bass drum in at the end again, which makes it very mix out DJ friendly.
Yeah, I had to think of that too.
Okay.
Tell you what it's great for. It's fantastic to perform to because it gives you an exit.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's such a great number to perform. It literally brings the house down. I usually close with that number.
Hmm.
Ah. And you close with it because of that exit? Because the exit...
It's such a happy upbeat and everybody knows the song and it's really just... But it leaves them singing and happy, and, you know, you got to leave them up. So that's what I do.
Very good point.
But
I keep
my show, so I keep freaking people out, so they don't know what to expect.
That's true. That is very true.
By the way, VJC is in chat and says kudos in the remix. He loves it, too, and runs it on Disco 935 and says hello to you guys. And before I forget I have a question that one of the chatters has asked, and I'll forget it if I don't ask you now. It's a question for Tom. Let me roll back to that. One of our listeners has called and asked if you knew John White or Peggy Fears.
Well, John White is the man who owned the Botel.
Ah. Well, now I know this listener.
I have an interesting story right there about Sooner or Later and the Botel, which is a pavilion. The first record played when it was bought from John by Bob Howard into Tea Dance with Sooner or Later.
Hmm.
So isn't that a weird...
Yes, I'll go along with that.
The story continues a generation later.
One of our listeners was also trying to, since we brought up the cowbell, one of our listeners was remarking that they tried to figure out where the cowbell might have been.
actually, you'll have to get the original version.
Not in the mix.
You know, there is a was the song Fascinating? I'm Fascinated by Your Love Boy. Was that the one that had the cowbell in it? There was a huge disco hit.
Oh, no, that was the song done by Bobby O. That was Company B, Fascinated.
Yes, Fascinated. Yes, yes. Was that the one?
Fascinated, that was done by Ish.
No, Ish, rather. Excuse me. Cause it's Florida, too, so that's why I was thinking Bobby O.
Right.
Was that the one with the cowbell?
Yes.
Yeah, I always loved that.
I worked with Bobby O. He put a lot of cowbell in everything.
Bobby, that's why I mentioned his name then.
Yes.
The Latin influence.
In fact, one of the first records
I worked on with him was She Has a Way, and this cowbell through that whole thing, and he actually played it. And it was amazing that in those days you couldn't quantize it or get it. He just went in and did it in one take, like, wah, 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 wah. It was amazing to see him do it.
I remember the night I ran that as one of the dance tracks of the night one evening, and people in chat were going, is that a cowbell? It pretty much leaves people incredulous. It's just unexpected.
It was used a lot, and now there's a resurgence of it. In fact, Steve used it in his remix of To Save the Love. He used the cowbell.
Ah. Oh, really? Okay. And speaking of To Save the Love, we're going to run that in just a minute. Now, Tom, is it still there? Or did you slay the cowbell?
I'm trying to think if there was a cowbell in that record. I don't remember hearing one.
In the original version, no. In Steve Skinner's remix, yes. In your
song in the catalog. I always told you that the minute I heard it. I told you that, you know.
And but it's just my favorite song of the whole catalog already, and the fact that we're dedicating it to Brian and to Daryl, and the fact that it is a hit. And there's a very, very special thing. Let me tell you about this with the Save the Love. I just got an email last evening from Generation Q. I'd done an interview with them, with Jake O'Hara. They are doing their full issue starting on Monday, and they're calling it to Save the Love issue. And all the articles that they took a whole month together to put this whole thing together is about saving the love, and they're exploring gay relationships and infidelity, long-term relationships, everything about gay relationships, and they're calling it, the whole banner is to Save the Love, and they're using my song as the anthem, and they're going to be streaming the video in their website. So I was so honored, and I'm just very thankful, and Tom, the fact that you added such a fantastic mix, and Steve and everybody who worked on that record.
Well, Julian,
thankful.
Too, so.
And Julian, yes, oh my God, yes. Fantastic, fantastic work here.
So it's the version we're about to play is the one that the site is running.
The one that's going on is the video is going on, and that's the one that was done by Mike Kopeck and Tony Spaulding, and that's the UK Mix Show mix, and they do mixes for Almighty and Magic Music UK, and that's video. But a video mix being done of the Tom Moulton Julian Marsh mix currently right now that will be out in December.
Oh, great.
Wonderful. Now, what is the name of the site again? Where would we go to find that if we wanted to? Because it sounds like a great concept.
Generation Q.
And is it's the full word generation rather than gen.
You can just go to my MySpace page, and all the info will be there.
Ah, wonderful. Well, then that's available off of this.
They originally said it was going to be October 1st, and then they delayed it because they put this whole thing together, and I didn't really quite understand it at first, and now I do, and I'm so honored the fact that they have chosen to Save the Love is their banner anthem, and I think it's such a quality choice. I'm just thankful, and the fact that it is, as I said, being dedicated in memorial tribute to Brian, it makes it even more bittersweet.
Wonderful. Well, let's run that. We're pretty much keeping on schedule, which I'm glad to do because this music must be heard. This is the Tom Moulton and Julian Marsh mix of To Save the Love. Bob, if you'd run that. Absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. And one of the great attributes of that track is how well the low end fits. It's very melodic, and it works so well with the rest of the instruments.
That bass line is salacious.
It is.
Well, that's what got me. That's what really got me. That and the those backgrounds really got me, too. So.
Yeah. I also have some very exciting news to share with you about that track. The track has officially made history.
Really?
Right now, this track, To Save the Love 207, which is, as I stated, from my forthcoming new album that I'm currently recording, Eternally, has re-entered the Dance Music Authority chart for not the first time, not the second time, but for the third time after being number one for 8 weeks standing previously.
Wow.
It re-entered at 48 and within 1 month jumped to number 16 with a bullet with no end in sight, which makes the song a genuine classic hit.
Great.
Because there is no other track on that chart that is important or says a message like this record, To Save the Love. And I am so thankful to everybody who has helped it get there. I just want to just say thank you so much, because it means so much to me. And thank you, Tom, because without your input, it would never have happened.
Well, thank you. I bet the song means a lot to me, too.
Well, I could see easily why people love it so, and the fact that it's dedicated to Brian, and you mentioned another person who, and I didn't know who the other person
it's
dedicated.
Cheryl Carpenter, who was my best friend and my co-writer, who co-wrote that song with me, my next single. He also wrote many of my previous hits, like Follow Your Heart, You Make Me Weak. He was a co-writer with me and Steve Skinner, and unfortunately, we lost him to AIDS.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Tom, it breaks my heart. And the fact, though, that his work can continue to live on, and that's what's the incredible point. Only music survives, and that's what we have to give. If we can give the world back music, then we have given the world something. That's one thing that keeps me going. I've said this before. With everything, all the tragedy I've gone through recently, and it's a lot, the one thing that's keeping me going is the music, recording this new album, because it gives me a purpose. It gives me a cause. And to see this come back and see, like, these mini successes, or actually these grand successes, I'm just thankful. And this tells me, yeah, this is what you should be doing, Ernest. This is what you should be doing with your life. And it's helping me get through and heal.
Well, it is an amazing track. Tom, I have a question for you. Both you and Julian Marsh are accomplished artists regarding remixing and the recording industry. What is it like to work with someone? In other words, is it difficult? Are you able to? How is it for you to work with someone when you're as accomplished as you are?
Well, that's easy. First of all, when I heard the song, I asked Ernest, because I said, you know, Ernest, I'd like to do a mix on what Julian had added to it and done to it. I said, I just feel I could add something more to it. And, you know, I talked to Julian about it, and he said, oh, he had no problem with it. He said he thought it would be a great idea to do a collaboration, and that's what we did. And, I mean, I like, that song means so much to me. I listen to it every day. I just love that song so much. It always puts me in a sort of very nice mood.
Well, it is a wonderful song. Ernest, you said something I thought was significant, that what we can leave people is the music, and it's so important. That's
it's
how
really
they
true.
How they know
really
us.
Think about it. Only music survives. If anything I can give, I mean, you can tape somebody's performance, but you know what? That's just the tape of a performance. You can do a performance, but all you have is a memory. You can remember the person in your memory, but with music, you actually can really keep it.
Well, I completely agree, and it brought to mind the fact that while people like you and I know Tom Moulton's name from since we could crawl.
Thank you.
Yes,
growing up, I mean, seriously, I was I don't even remember what age, but listening to records like Never Can Say Goodbye on the radio, which were Tom Moulton mixes.
I'm glad you brought that out.
Saturday Night Fever.
And Disco Inferno.
Disco Inferno, hello.
Right.
That's
right.
Tom Moulton, Grace Jones, hello.
Yeah. That's why I wanted to bring that out, because, listeners, you actually do know Tom Moulton. You may not think you do, but you know him intimately.
You know,
true.
Lolita Holloway, Dan Hartman, the word disco.
Yeah, and I think everybody's probably heard the continuous Never Can Say Goodbye side. What was that, about 18, 20 minutes long? How long was that?
It was 18-something. That was the first time that was done like that. That was the first time.
Now, I understand that Gloria Gaynor reaction was a little bit, maybe, dare I use the words, well, let me just say what she said rather than quantify it. She said to you, well, I don't hear myself singing very much, as if she objected to...
Well, no, when I brought it back, when I mentioned that we were working on the album, and I said, well, I have this idea to put these three songs together and make it a big suite, and they said, oh, okay, let's go for it. And when we played it in the office, and she was sitting there, and then I said, well, what do you think, Lori? She says, I don't sing much. And I said, well, I guess you'll have to dance, Summers, part where you're singing. I didn't know what else to do. And I really felt bad because, you know, I was just trying to make a statement with that, and as it turned out, I did.
Well, it's unforgettable, and thank you for having the nerve to do. I mean, you know, it takes a certain amount of nerve to, like, eliminate some of Gloria Gaynor's lyrics back in the day. You know what I mean? That was a ballsy move.
Well, remember those songs, if they were 3.5 minutes long, that was a lot on the tape. So I had to get the other music from someplace. So that's where that creativeness came in. So.
Very good point. Very good point.
And this new album, Eternally, we are doing a suite just like that. And I do hope Tom will recreate his magic again.
Good.
Well, now this. Let's talk about the CD that's called The Importance of Being. How did that come about? Did you conceive it as a concept CD?
Totally, completely from start to finish. That actually, we went in from day one. We had had a couple hits beforehand. As I said, Don't Let Me Down. But we actually went in with this whole idea of the concept of doing The Importance of Being. And to this day, I thought it was the hardest thing to ever do, that album. It seemed like a monumental production to ever get through, and to get through it was like, whoa. But it's nothing like this album I'm doing now. It's even a bigger production, you know, a double album and everything. But The Importance of Being, it's really kind of a cool project, because it did come to fruition and it did work. And I have to thank Tom for that, and Stephen L. Freeman, who you probably know his work from Donna Summer and from Hot Tracks, who put their magic to the mixes. And Tom really got in there, and not only did he produce and mix, but he actually wrote some of the tracks on it.
Really?
Yes.
Really? Well, which ones did he write?
He came in and he wrote Love Has Taken Over.
Well, that's wonderful. That's
with
one of the tracks.
With me and with Steve Skinner.
Amazing. So you wrote the lyrics and the whole thing?
And even got in the booth with me and told me how to sing it and when not to sing it. And didn't let me get away with a thing, did you, Tom?
I forgot about that part.
And he would point at me when I was to come in. It was like,
oh, that's right, because I wanted to try to make it a little more soulful. That's right.
And
I remember now.
Lay back in the track.
I said, I want to make it a little darker than you normally do. I remember that now.
Do you remember what I did? Oh, gosh, I'm going to get in trouble if I tell this story.
Well, just be careful.
Oh, please tell.
Okay. To freak him out, I came in a little darker shade of makeup. But still with the blue eyes.
That was funny.
But Tom kept pointing at me, and I was like, it's really hard to do to when you're used to singing this type of music, and you really have to be, usually are on the one, and to enter a little bit back.
Like four and, yeah.
Yeah. It's,
or sometimes one and a half, you know, one and.
Yeah, it's on the and. And
being like one and two and three and four.
And four. Yeah. Right. And as the way I got it, the actual real way I got it, I thought back to one of my early dance teachers, Chuck Kelly, who always said, if you can say it, you can do it. And that's the way he would, like, teach a combination, like, or like a tap combination, slap, da, da, and two, and three, and four, and slap, and slap, and boom. You know, if you can say it, you can do it. So count it out, 1 and 2 and 3 and 4, 5 and 6 and 7 and 8. 1 and 2, kick 3 and 4, 5, 6, 7, turn and 8.
Yep.
So all this was going through your mind when Tom was telling you that? Was you're trying to.
But he was standing right in the booth, like less than 2 inches from me, directing me. And when his hand would go down, that's when I had to come out. And when it was up, I had to be out. And,
or I would give you a four count, or I would give you a one, two, three, four.
And
like
a couple times they pulled the headphones off me because they didn't want me hearing the beat.
Really?
And
that was just evil.
Give me a bell tone, like, you know, bum. So I'd hit my note, and I'd have to hold my note in my head so it was coming out of the blue. Do you know what I mean?
Well,
and
I
then
they were...
I quickly throw my head one headphone up to my ear so I would hear the groove. And then it would be down again. And then the hand would go up, and I'd be off.
Well, whatever it took.
But
well, that's remarkable.
The one thing he said is we made Ernest Cole sound funky.
That's remarkable that you two could work together that well without...
Oh, with Steve and Tom and I, it got this energy going between us. It was like magic.
Oh, there was, believe me, there was always this energy the minute, you know... If they were there before me, the minute I walk in, it's okay. Let's work. And you could feel the electricity in the room. I mean, it was just really, it was great. You know, working together like that.
And you want to know what's so interesting? At the very exact same time, they were doing the musical Rent in the same studio. So when we would leave, they would come in and doing Rent, and then they would go out. And the other record they were doing was the new Bette Midler record.
Mm-hmm.
So there was so much positive, great energy coming out of that room. It was, like, amazing. And the fact that this album now has been issued as a catalog album and is always going to be available, that's so cool. It's always going to be available by Unitas Records. So I never in my life, usually an album comes out and it just, you know, after it's done its thing, it goes away. But this album just keeps living. And I have now, I think... Gosh, 8 albums that are catalog albums, and that's really cool to become a catalog album artist. That's what one strives for instead of just being, you know, a one-hit wonder or, having a career. It's really, really, it's interesting and it's cool, and I'm really thankful.
Well, Tom, you have a gift, sir. I recognize good music when I hear it, but I wouldn't know how to put it. I wouldn't know how to tell anybody to do it. It's just a remarkable talent that you have, and thank God you're there because you've helped a lot. You made a lot of people happy. Wouldn't you agree, Ernest?
Oh,
well,
I mean,
it makes me very happy too. Believe me,
it's so fun working with Tom. I can't begin to tell you. It's just fascinating to watch. I remember I came in one day, and we were doing a cover of The Rose, and Tom just walked over to Steve, and he went, I hear this. And I said, this sounds like some whacked-out country guitar. And it's just, do you know
but
what?
But it wasn't.
The part that he put in made the record. It made it work, and I'm forever grateful for it. And that record's available on my album, The Portrait of Ernest Cole, Volume 2, which is also a catalog album.
And what is the name of that track, then, again?
The Rose. It's a duet with Katie Agresta.
Oh,
and voice teacher, who is also Stevie Snow's voice teacher, who I do a duet with on The Importance of Being album.
Really? And so this is, of course, the Bette Midler Rose. The Rose.
Yes.
That's right. Amazing. It's a beautiful song. Well done.
And
well,
she
before
was
we get
Bette
to
Midler's The Ranger, and there had never been a dance version done of The Rose, and we were like,
oh no,
why
this
don't
is
we
a dance.
Do it up and do it differently and do it as a duet. And Katie thought, that's perfect for my voice. And I said, it sure is.
So you've
and
done a dance
and
version.
We knocked it out.
Who knew? What a kick! What a kick that is! Well, I'm going to have to look that up and use it on the show one night. But before we get too far away from it, I want to run "Love Has Taken Over," which Tom Moulton wrote, and Tom Moulton stood in front of Ernest Cole and made him do what he wanted. Lord, I wish I had a video of that.
I'll bet you Ernest does too.
Oh, do I?
Well, with that said, let's, Bob, if you would run "Love Has Taken Over." Wow. all I can say is wow. And I am so glad that I intentionally had not listened to that track either until it aired, because I wanted to hear it when the others did for the first time. And I've got to tell you, that is one hell of a track. I just love it. It's got every component of an old Southern gospel, and then the sax kicks in. It's just fabulous. It was genius.
Isn't that sax solo amazing?
It's genius. And questions in the chat room.
Here's a weird coincidence. I was in a store on the Upper West Side like 2 days ago, and I was right by, just standing by the door, about to walk out the door, and who walks in the door but this guy, and he stares at me and he goes, "You're Ernest Cole." And I went, "Yeah." Like, okay, what's
yeah,
that
right
now?
Yeah, where's the gun?
New York City, you never know. You know,
yeah.
I really wasn't looking, I mean, I wasn't done or anything, looking like, you know, about to go on stage or anything. And he went, "Dan Harrison." And I went, "Oh, my God." And it was my sax player. And I hadn't seen him in 2 years. And he didn't know that Brian had passed on. And he now is going to be coming on to do a solo on the new album.
Really?
So amazing.
Oh,
really?
Great.
Yes.
And there are questions in the chat room. People are dying to know who the backup vocalist. Who was that woman? She was fabulous.
Oh, she's really cool. She is a singer-songwriter. Her name is Jeannie McLean. She goes out, or she's had some...
Paper Mache.
Paper Mache, yeah. She's had some success on her own, but she's really a singer-songwriter. She's really great. She's done a lot of work with me, and she's kind of like... she's had some success. She's really good.
Well, the Pepper Mache, that's the sort of name that you wish you had thought of. I just thought to myself, damn, I wish I'd thought of that.
Yes, her real name is Jean McLean. She's fantastic. You know, she's, I think she's a little bit retired now, but she's done a lot of good work, and we love working with her.
Just a beautiful song. I'm still stunned by it. Someone in chat, it brought to mind... remember Etta James, the Disconet remix of Etta James doing Blowin' in the Wind? It brought that to mind from one of the chatters who was listening to the track we just played, just because of the feel of it. It's really a hell of a song. It's just amazing.
Wow, Disconet. I haven't heard that in so long. I was on the last issue of Disconet ever. How weird is that? It wasn't Steven... Wow, what was his name?
Mike Wilkinson was the guy who started it.
Wow, that's
and he passed. He passed. He died. He's one of the early ones who died of AIDS. It's a shame. He's such a nice guy.
So many people lost. So many.
Yeah, exactly.
People.
So many. You're right. And Disconet, of course, is legend. I hold it in the same esteem I do Tom. That was the end-all and the be-all. Now, Hot Tracks, of course, is wonderful, but somehow Disconet...
Which is out there right now, which I've got to give so much kudos and so much thanks to, is Promo Only. And they actually have helped make To Save the Love 207 a major hit. And right in their next issue, they're putting out my current hit, Live Like You Were Dying, which is so fantastic. And they have the video out of To Save the Love 207. They're as great as Hot Tracks, if not better, or Disconet, but they're carrying it on to the new generation. And they're really making such strong headway because they're using really great music, and they really judge it. You really got to work to be on them, and to be chosen to be on there is such an honor. And I just got to say, hey, thank you guys at Promo Only. You are the ultimate. Thank you, Dave Canalti. You're excellent. Yay!
Well, I must tell you, too, that the chat room is demanding that I get a copy of The Rose, your dance version. Everybody wants to hear it. Maybe when Mr. Sokolov gets back, we can ask him.
You know what?
For...
I would love you to even speak to Miss Katie Agresta, who is the singing teacher to the stars. And without her, I would have no voice. She teaches Annie Lennox, Phoebe Snow, John Bon Jovi, Steven Tyler, Carole King. I mean, the list is endless. I mean, it's amazing just working with her. And... she is just the most marvelous person and the most marvelous vocalist and the most fantastic singing teacher I've ever known and a best friend.
Wonderful. Well, please, please recommend her to us. I would love to have her on. And I need to tell you that we have a caller. VJC would like to speak to you guys.
Oh,
welcome,
yay.
VJC.
Hey, Ernest.
Welcome.
And hi,
hey,
Tom
VJC.
Morton.
Hello.
How you doing, Tom and Ernest? Tom Moulton.
Yes.
Great mixes, remixes on his work. I'm a big fan of yours for many, many years. I've been playing many of your remixes on Disco 93.5. I don't know if you know who I am, but I'm also in New York. So just letting you know. And Ernest, I heard your latest stuff. It's great. Great stuff.
Oh, thank you so much. I just thank you so much for playing me.
No, the importance of being, I just heard that. I will be playing that on Disco 93.5. I think that is a great
jam. Oh, yeah, that's available now. You can even get it for digital download. You know, it's surprising that a lot of people don't know about that album, but it's there, it's out there, and I'm really proud of that album.
Well, I just heard the whole album myself for the last 24 hours. I've been, you know, not in the last 20, in other words, I've been hearing the last couple of days, and it's great stuff. I'm going to see if I can put some stuff together and send you another mega mix or something like that.
Oh, my gosh. I love the mega mixes.
All right? I mean, not like what Tom does. I mean, you know, he blows me away. I mean, I don't think I can ever do work like he does.
You mean you're not going to come into the studio and point at me? But you know what? I think on this new album, I do need some Tom Moulton updated pointers. And I just know exactly where they're going to go, and I know exactly a couple things he's going to say already. I know it. And I've already said it to Elliot, my co-producer, who you're going to have on the show, Peter. And we're waiting for it.
Well, yes, I'm looking forward to having that, too. Now, he's scheduled not next week, but I believe Tuesday of the week after that. One moment, let me check here. He is scheduled for the 23rd. Elliot.
Right, which is the day before we start our massive marathon recording session on the 24th through November 2nd. I'm doing all vocals here in New York City for the new album Eternally.
Wonderful.
Studios at Studio 77.
Well, he's a remarkable person. I have enjoyed speaking
right now, doing a film score, I believe.
Ah, really?
Yep.
Ah, he's a very talented man. Apparently, he's a composer and with
really
classical music, and he spans the whole spectrum.
Everything from film to musical theater to commercials to scoring to dance music. He does it all. He's brilliant.
Now, VJC, VJC, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm here, Peter.
Good. I was wondering, are you like me? Are you totally awed by talking to these guys? I feel like...
obviously, I spoke to Ernest last 3-4 months ago. I was obviously, how I met him is through Glenn Rivera. And when we talked, you know, here in New York through the phone, I mean, he seems to be such a great guy, and his music is just fabulous. And I've been featuring it on Disco 93.5, and then he was telling me that Tom Moulton remixed some of this stuff. And when I heard the Sooner or Later stuff, I said, wow, what a remix. Because I've had a lot of Tom Moulton's stuff from back in the day in the 70s.
That you sent about to Save the Love 207 was really quite incredible, VJ.
Oh, I haven't heard that one. You have that one? I haven't heard that one yet.
Oh, to Save the Love. Remember the Tom Moulton mix that I sent you? And you
Okay. It's just, you know, I hear so many mixes and so many different versions. I'm trying to remember all
this
stuff.
This song is the...
That sounds just like VJC. How funny is that?
Good.
Yeah, that seems to me I remember seeing that email. Yeah, I seem to remember seeing that. I can confirm that he did say that. He, in fact, did say that.
A quick thing about to Tom Moulton.
What's that?
Yeah, I know. I've met also Bobby Vitaretti and Larry Sanders. Have you ever met them?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Well, Bobby's no longer with us, so.
No, Bobby Vitaretti.
Oh, Bobby Vitaretti. Oh, I thought.
Right now.
I get mixed. I get Bobby and Bobby Gattadero and Bobby Vitaretti mixed up sometimes.
Right. Gattadero, he passed away, but Vitaretti's still around.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, that's true.
I met him here in New York the last several months also, and also Larry Sanders. He came by from Frisco to meet Bobby and and there's my picture and him is on with Bobby and Larry on the website, Disco 93.5. We met about a couple of weeks ago. So I'm just thrilled and honored to be talking to you and Bobby and Larry, the guys who really started the craze of disco mixing. I mean, obviously, I was back doing that stuff too, but I wasn't really known because I didn't really have the know-how of doing what you guys are doing. But like I said, I appreciate the type of work you guys been doing, especially, you know, when I hear it, I play it on my station. I've been still playing it. I think it's just timeless remixes that will, you know, that will go on forever and ever. It's just my opinion. I mean, even though I'm a DJ myself.
VJC, you go back to the DiscoNet days, right?
Yeah, I've heard his work that he's done on DiscoNet.
Right, and that's where I was going with that. Tom, have other people remixed your remixes on DiscoNet, or did you work? I'm trying to recall if you worked directly with DiscoNet. Did you do some of the DiscoNet remixes?
No, I didn't do any of them because. That's a good question. Why? I was in Philadelphia most of the time back in that day when most of those DiscoNet things were going.
Well, how did you feel about other people remixing your remixes? Because I know you have.
I want to know what's so interesting. At the very exact same time, they were doing the musical Rent in the same studio. So when we would leave, they would come in and doing Rent, and then they would go out, and the other record they were doing was the new Bette Midler record.
Mm-hmm.
So there was so much positive, great energy coming out of that room. It was, like, amazing. And the fact that this album now has been issued as a catalog album and is always going to be available, that's so cool. It's always going to be available by Unitas Records. So I never in my life, usually an album comes out and it just, you know, after it's done its thing, it goes away. But this album just keeps living. And I have now, I think, 8 albums that are catalog albums. And that's really cool to become a catalog album artist. That's what one strives for instead of just being, you know, a one-hit wonder or, having a career is really, really, it's interesting and it's cool, and I'm really thankful.
Well, Tom, you have a gift, sir. I recognize good music when I hear it, but I wouldn't know how to put it. I wouldn't know how to tell anybody to do it. It's a remarkable talent that you have, and thank God you're there because you've helped a lot. You made a lot of people happy. Wouldn't you agree, Ernest?
Well, I mean, it makes me very happy, too, believe me.
It's so much fun working with Tom, I can't begin to tell you. It's just fascinating to watch. I remember I came in one day, and we were doing a cover of The Rose, and Tom just walked over to Steve, and he went, "I hear this." And I said, "This sounds like some whacked out country guitar." And it's just, do you know
but
what?
But it wasn't.
It what the part that he put in made the record. It made it work, and I'm forever grateful for it. And that record's available on my album, The Portrait of Ernest Cole, Volume 2, which is also a catalog album.
And what is the name of that track then, again?
The Rose. It's a duet with Katie Agresta.
Oh,
and voice teacher, who is also Stevie Snow's voice teacher, who I do a duet with on the Importance of Being album.
Really? And so this is, of course, the Bette Midler Rose. The Rose.
Yes.
That's right. Amazing. It's a beautiful song. Well done.
And
well,
Steve
before we get
Bette
to
Midler's the Ranger, and there had never been a dance version done of The Rose, and we were like,
oh no,
why
this
don't
is
we
a dance.
Do it up and do it differently and do it as a duet. And Katie thought, that's perfect for my voice. And I said, it sure is.
So you've
and
done a dance
and
version.
And knocked it out.
Who knew? What a kick that is. Well, I'm going to have to look that up and use it on the show one night. But before we get too far away from it, I want to Run Love Has Taken Over, which Tom Moulton wrote. And Tom Moulton stood in front of Ernest Cole and made him do what he wanted. Lord, I wish I had a video of that.
I'll bet you Ernest does, too.
Oh, do I.
Well, with that said, let's, Bob, if you would run Love Has Taken Over. Wow. All I can say is wow. And I am so glad that I intentionally had not listened to that track either until it aired, because I wanted to hear it when the others did for the first time. And I've got to tell you, that is one hell of a track. I just love it. It's got every component of an old Southern gospel, and then the sax kicks in. It's just fabulous. It was genius.
Isn't that sax solo amazing?
It's genius. And questions in the chat room.
Here's a weird coincidence. I was in a store on the Upper West Side like 2 days ago, and I was right by, just standing by the door, about to walk out the door, and who walks in the door but this guy, and he stares at me, and he goes, "You're Ernest Cole." And I went, "Yeah?" Like, okay, what's
yeah,
that
right.
now?
Yeah, where's the gun?
New York City, you never know. You know,
yeah.
I really wasn't looking, I mean, I wasn't done or anything, looking like, you know, about to go on stage or anything. And he went, "Dan Harrison." And I went, "Oh, my God." And it was my sax player. And I hadn't seen him in 2 years. And he didn't know that Brian had passed on. And he now is going to be coming on to do a solo on the new album.
Really?
So amazing.
Oh,
really?
Great.
Yes.
And there are questions in the chat room. People are dying to know who the backup vocalist. Who was that woman? She was fabulous.
Oh, she's really cool. She is a singer-songwriter. Her name is Jeannie McLean. She goes out, or she's had some...
Paper Mache.
Pepper Mache, yeah. She's had some success on her own, but she's really a singer-songwriter. She's really great. She's done a lot of work with me, and she's kind of like, she's had some success. She's really good.
Well, the Pepper Mache, that's the sort of name that you wish you had thought of. I just thought to myself, damn, I wish I'd thought of that.
Yes, her real name is Jean McLean. She's fantastic. You know, she's, I think she's a little bit retired now, but she's done a lot of good work, and we love working with her.
Just a beautiful song. I'm still stunned by it. Someone in chat, it brought to mind, remember Etta James, the Disconet remix of Etta James doing Blowin' in the Wind? It brought that to mind from one of the chatters who was listening to the track we just played, just because of the feel of it. It's really a hell of a song. It's just amazing.
Wow, Disconet. I haven't heard that. I want to know what's so interesting. At the very exact same time, they were doing the musical Rent in the same studio. So when we would leave, they would come in and doing Rent, and then they would go out, and the other record they were doing was the new Bette Midler record.
Mm-hmm.
So there was so much positive, great energy coming out of that room. It was, like, amazing. And the fact that this album now has been issued as a catalog...
wasn't. I think you're right. I think it could have been a CNC. I think they also did Dr. Love. But I could remember the last person who really did a remix on that was Shep Pettibone. But I think you could be right that CNC did that, CNC Music Factory.
Well, you know, this is funny to me. Last night we did a show on aging and how it relates to the LGBT community. And this sounds just like the sort of conversation we would all have in our rocking chairs sitting in front of shady pines.
You mean I don't remember?
Yeah, I don't remember.
Who did... Who mixed it? No. Oh,
I'm not to be the young in here.
Oh my, such history. VJC, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
In leaving, hey Tom, it's been nice talking to you, and
same here.
We'll be talking.
Okay, VJ, I great to talk to you.
Okay, bye bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for calling.
Bye.
Thank you for calling. And I desperately want to get this music is so wonderful. I desperately want to get to it all. And which is, you know, normally I never just say goodbye to a caller. Normally I chat with him all night, but I'm sure VJC understands this stuff is got. But we just a little while ago we talked about your voice teacher was a coach of taught Phoebe Snow. Did I get that right?
She still teaches Phoebe Snow. And we all continue to train because it's like working out. You got to keep doing, or you got to keep dancing. You got to keep always doing what you do. Like right now, currently, I'm learning to go to work for my new album that I'm recording. As I said, I start my vocals on the 24th of October, and I'm doing them through November 2nd. So right now, I'm currently doing all the pre-production matrixing vocal work on that. And that really, it's like working out your voice so you're ready when you go into the studio.
Well, we have a duet that's been uploaded to the studio, The Fugitive of Love. Now, tell us about that track, because I really wanted to get to that song this evening. That, with Phoebe Snow, it's got to be fabulous. Tell us about that track,
very
and Tom, too.
Story. Phoebe was a dear friend of Brian and mine, and best friends with Katie, and as I said, she was both of our voice teachers. And we all came up with the idea that we could do a duet on the Importance album. Just like on most albums, there is a duet, as there's going to be a duet on this new album Eternally, but I cannot say who it's with. It has to be somebody of a great stature, and Phoebe, as you know, is a Grammy Award winner and is an amazing vocalist as well as an amazing person. And writing with her was just one of the most fantastic situations I've ever been in as a writer, because her and Steve Skinner and myself sat down. She opened the book she originally wrote Poetry Man in, and on one side of the page were the lyrics to Poetry Man. And she told us the true story about what inspired her to write the song Poetry Man, as you know, which was a big 70s hit for her.
That was a wonderful song.
Wonderful, amazing song, which is still a classic hit to this day. And on the other side, we did an answer to the song, Poetry Man, which was The Fugitive of Love. Now,
really?
Poetry Man was, it's not really a great, pretty story, if you know the true story. It's a heartbreak story, and it's somebody who's stolen her heart away and walked out of her life, and that's what we carried on with The Fugitive of Love. We took that story, and I don't want to say that The Fugitive of Love is an angry song, but it's definitely, it definitely pushed some boundaries, and some people are really, it's either you love it or you hate it. It's one of those songs, but we decided to go all the way with it, and Tom came in, and when Tom came in, he just took it right over the top. He did not hold anything back, and what he did with it, he did all this beautiful orchestration over the top, but when you hear those vocals, it's almost like we are not competing, but there's an argument going on between us in those vocals, and the vocal arrangements were so intricate in the way that we had to do them and lay them, and the way that Tom mixed it was so perfection. I am so proud of it.
Were you in the studio? Were you actually in the studio when Phoebe was singing? How did that work?
No, I wasn't there for her recording.
No, she wanted to work alone with just Steve and I. She was very, very strong about that. She didn't want any pressure. She was going through a lot of things with her daughter, which her daughter has passed away. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, my.
Which is a great loss again. And she just really just wanted to have a very, very safe environment to go and do this record.
What are you trying to say about me, Ernest?
Well, no.
A safe environment where there's no pressure. I got to remember that.
Where there's nobody shaking their fist.
Oh, God.
A safe environment. I got to remember that.
You know what? I'm just going to let you loose on the back, boy, this time.
Safe environment.
I know there's going to be more, but in this next record.
Well, before we go much further, I desperately want to hear this. And
it's
Phoebe
actually
Snow,
a mini musical within itself.
Phoebe's wonderful. Phoebe is singing this in a safe space with Ernest Cole and then
first dance record ever.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Now that's interesting. Interesting. Well, I can't wait to hear it, and I know it's magical. Bob, if you had run The Fugitive of Love, it's the duet with Phoebe Snow and Ernest Cole.
Thank you.
Just wow. I have to agree with one of our chatters. It runs right out my nerve endings, she says, and it does mine too. And such a powerful song because we all feel that way. It is such a personal song. I don't think any of us have escaped life without feeling that way.
It was such an emotional song to do that I think you can understand why Phoebe and I needed to be isolated to do it, because we really had to become actors, kind of taking ourselves out of the body, our own bodies, and to portray those lyrics, because they're really serious lyrics that we're singing.
Well, you, by all means, yes, it's serious stuff,
and it's,
I can't begin to tell you the memories that it brought back to me, and people I know, and situations. It was a deeply personal song for me.
Yeah, very, very, very personal, and also it's such a rangy song to sing. I can't even tell you how difficult some of those vocal calisthenics, I will call them, that we both did in that record were to execute. It was a work of art and a work of love. We kind of needed to express ourselves onto tape, and that's what we did. And took it and made it magic.
Well, one of the chatters is pointing out that she loves the layers, that there's so much happening and there's so many layers.
We did all of those vocals ourselves, just Phoebe and I. We had to layer and layer and layer and layer and layer, and it literally was about 5 days of just doing vocals, but it was 5 days of joy. It was just 5 days of joy of working doing it. It was so amazing working with that woman, and because she's such an artist, and there was tears, there was laughter, there was just emotion. Everybody was there, you know. It was just Brian was there. It was just a wonderful time in my life in history, and I'm so glad it's captured on this album, the importance of being that is, you know, now been made available by Unitas Records as one of their catalog albums. It's available for digital download at www.theoutclub.com. You can go right there, right now, and get it. I just am very proud of it.
Well, Tom, what was it like remixing something that's that powerful? Surely, I mean, someone with your background, you knew right away that the depth of that song. How do you approach something like that?
I don't know. I've always had that ability to be able to sort of hear it in my head the way it's supposed to sound. I mean, I don't really quite understand that to this day, but, you know, whenever I hear something, you know, I say, oh, I'm going to work on that. I almost hear how it would sound finished in my head, and I try to explain it to somebody, and I go, "Don't you hear that?" Well, no, maybe if you mix it, I can understand what you're talking about, and then usually I get, "Oh, now I understand."
Ah, yes, which
and
reminds
me. He will not let me hear things until they're done, which drives me insane because.
Well, a lot of times, you know, Ernest will say, "Well, I don't like this and I don't like that." I said, "Ernest, you have to wait till it's finished to understand where I'm going with it."
It'd be like making soup and you've got, like, you know, just a couple things in, but, you know, everything's not in the soup yet, so you don't know what's there.
Well, like with Steve, I'd always say, "I'm hearing this part." And then I'd say, "Just do this." And he would look at me sometimes and say, "I don't get it." And I go, I hum the part. I go, "This is what I want to hear, and I want to hear it done with a string, or I want to hear it done with a horn." And I mean, it was, and finally, after a while, he just learned to trust me on it, you know.
Totally.
That's
and
amazing.
Completely. And the energy between the two of them is magnificent. Steve Skinner, our other co-producer, who is so brilliant, who is the
Well, he'd go right along. He would latch on. When I explained something, he would go right with it, and he knew where I was going with it. It was really amazing.
I mean, his work is really well represented with the musical Rent. He did all the musical direction and arrangement.
No, he's great.
For that. And won a Pulitzer for that work.
Well, now, Tom, this reminds me of something I read about you earlier. There was a particular remix that you did years and years ago, and I wish I had it in front of me what the song was, but basically the artist went on like they didn't like it because it was too long or it wasn't what they wanted or whatever their problem was. Then shortly after that, it became a huge hit. Then they went out telling everybody, "Oh, we recorded it that way."
Oh, I was so mad over that. That was BT Express.